When we started, Helvetia, darling.
He knew she was trying to cheer him. Yes, that's true, isn't it? He said as he washed his face. His hands were grimy with soot, too, he saw. He let the dryer blow over his face, noisy and rattling, remembering the luxury of having actual cloth towels at the hotel in Cellini.
We could do that here,
Fuchs told himself. Vacuum clean them on the surface, just as they do at Cellini. It would save us electrical power if we could keep the laundry out of the dust up on the surface.
Any word from Star Power?
He asked as he stepped back into the main room.
She's on the way in, Amanda said. She'll be here when the lease is up, the end of the month.
Good.
Amanda's expression turned grave.
Lars, do you think it's a good idea for you to take Star Power out? Can't you hire a crew and stay here?
Crews cost money, he said, and we'd have to share whatever we find with the crew. I can handle a ship by myself.
But you'll be alone.
He knew what she meant. Ships had disappeared out in the belt, and he was marked for murder by Humphreys.
I'll be all right, he said. They won't know where I'm going.
Amanda shook her head.
Lars, all they have to do is tap into the IAA's net, and they'll see your tracking beacon. They'll know exactly where you are.
He almost smiled.
Not if the tracking beacon is coming from a drone that I release a day or two after I've left Ceres.
She looked totally surprised.
But that would be a violation of IAA regulations.
Yes, it would. It would also make my life much safer.
The work of cleaning up the charred mess of his warehouse took several days. It was hard to find men or women to do the menial labor. They demanded the same level of pay they could get working someone's computer systems or crewing one of the prospecting ships. So Fuchs hired all four of the teenagers on Ceres. They were eager to have something to do outside of their school hours, happy to be away from their lesson screens, happier still to be earning spendable money. Still, Fuchs did most of the labor himself, since the kids could only work a couple of hours each day. After several days, though, the four youngsters failed to show up for work. Fuchs phoned each of them and got a variety of lame excuses.
My parents don't want me working.
I got too much studying to do.
Only one of them hinted at the truth.
My father got an e-message that said he could lose his job if he let me work for you.
Fuchs didn't have to ask who the father worked for. He knew. Humphrey's Space Systems. So he labored alone in the warehouse cave, finally clearing out the last of the charred debris. Then he started putting together new shelving out of discarded scraps of metal from the maintenance bays. One evening, as he scuffed wearily along the dusty tunnel after a long day of putting up his new shelving, Fuchs was accosted by two men wearing HSS coveralls.
"You're Lars Fuchs, aren't you?"
said the taller of the pair. He was young, not much more than a teenager himself. His dirty blonde hair was cropped close to his skull. His coverall sleeves were rolled up past his elbows. Fuchs saw tattoos on both his forearms.
"I am," Fuchs answered, without slowing down.
They fell in step with him, one on either side. The shorter of the two was still a couple of centimeters taller than Fuchs, with a chunky build of a weightlifter. His hair was long and dark, his face swarthy.
"I got a piece of friendly advice for you," said the taller one. "Take your insurance money and leave Ceres."
Still shuffling along the tunnel, Fuchs said,
"You seem to know something about my business."
"Just get out of here before there's trouble," the other one said. His accent sounded Latino.
Fuchs stopped and looked them up and down.
"Trouble?" he asked. "The only trouble that happens here will be trouble that you start."
The taller one shrugged.
"Doesn't matter who starts it. What matters is who's still standing when it's over."
"Thank you," said Fuchs. "Your words will be useful evidence."
"Evidence?"
They both looked startled.
"Do you think I'm a fool?"
Fuchs said sharply.
"I know what you're up to. I'm wearing a transmitter that is sending every word you say to IAA headquarters in Geneva. If anything happens to me, you too have already been voice printed."
With that, Fuchs turned on his heel and strode away from the two toughs, leaving them dumbfounded and uncertain. Fuchs walked carefully, deliberately, stirring up as little dust as possible. He didn't want them to think he was running away from them. He also didn't want them to see how his legs were shaking. Above all, he didn't want them to figure out that his transmitter was a total bluff, invented on the spot to allow him to get away from them. By the time he got home, he was still trembling, but now it was with anger. Amanda flashed a welcoming smile at him from the computer desk. Fuchs could see from the wall screen that she was ordering inventory to stock the warehouse. Most of the machinery and electronic gear she ordered came from Astro Corporation. Now, he saw, she was dealing with foodstuffs and clothing, which came from other companies. He went to wash up as she stared wistfully at the latest Earthside fashions. By the time he came back into the room, she was finished with the computer. She slid her arms around his neck and kissed him warmly.
"What would you like for dinner?" she asked. "I just ordered a shipment of seafood from Selene, and I'm famished."
"Anything will do," he temporized as he disengaged from her and sat at the computer desk. Amanda went to the freezer as she asked,
"Will you be ready by the time the supplies start arriving?"
Working the computer, his eyes on the wall screen display, Fuchs barely nodded.
"I'll be ready," he muttered.
Amanda saw that he was studying the specifications for handheld lasers. Frowning slightly, she said,
"That looks like the laser that Buchanan fellow killed Ripley with."
"It is," Fuchs said, "and he tried to kill me with it, too."
"I've already ordered 6 of them, with an option for another half dozen when they're sold."
"I'm thinking of ordering one for myself," said Fuchs.
"For star power?"
He looked up at her. His face was grim.
"For myself," he said, "as a sidearm."
Star power swung lazily in the dark, star-choked sky above Ceres. "Strange," Fuchs noted as he climbed aboard the shuttlecraft, "that the sky still seems so black despite all those stars. Other suns," he thought, "billions of them, blazing out their light for eons. Yet here, on the rubble-heaped surface of Ceres, the world seemed dark, shadowy with menace." Shaking his head inside the fishbowl helmet, Fuchs clambered up the ladder and ducked through the shuttlecraft's hatch.
"No sense in taking off the suit until I'm inside star power," he told himself.
The shuttle flight would take mere minutes to lift him from the asteroid's surface to his waiting ship. The shuttle's HAB module was a bubble of glass steel. 2 other prospectors were already aboard, waiting to be transferred to their spacecraft. Fuchs said a perfunctory hello to them through his suit radio.
"Hey, Lars," one of them asked. "What are you going to do about the habitat?"
"Yeah," chimed in the other one. "We put up good money to build it.
When's it going to be finished so we can move in?"
Fuchs could see their faces through their helmets. They weren't being accusative or even impatient. They looked more curious than anything else. He forced a weak smile for them.
"I haven't had the chance to recruit a new project engineer. Someone to replace Ripley."
"Oh, yeah. Too bad about the Ripper."
"You did a good thing, Lars. That son of a bitch murdered the Ripper in cold blood."
Fuchs nodded his acknowledgement of their praise. The voice of the IAA controller told them the shuttlecraft would lift off in 10 seconds. The computer counted off the time. The 3 spacesuited men stood in the HAB module. There were no seats, nothing except a T-shaped podium that held the ship's controls, which weren't needed for this simple flight, and foot loops in the deck to hold them down in microgravity. Liftoff was little more than a gentle nudge, but the craft leaped away from Ceres's pitted, rock-strewn surface fast enough to make Fuchs's stomach lurch. Before he could swallow down the bile in his throat, they were in zero-G. Fuchs had never enjoyed weightlessness, but he put up with it as the IAA controller remotely steered the shuttle to the orbiting ship of the other 2 men before swinging almost completely around the asteroid to catch up with star power. Fuchs thought about hiring a replacement for Ripley. The funding for the habitat was adequate, barely. He had put the task on Amanda's list of action items.
"She'll have to do it," Fuchs said to himself. "She'll have to use her judgment. I'll be busy doing other things. Other things."
He cringed inwardly when he thought of the angry words he had flung at Humphreys.
"I've studied military history. I know how to fight." "How pathetic. So what are you going to do? Go out and shoot up Humphrey's spacecraft? Kill his employees? What will that accomplish except getting you arrested eventually or killed?" "You think too much, Lars Fuchs. You are quick to anger. But then your conscience frustrates you."
He had thought long and hard about searching out HSS vessels and destroying them.